Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Kay Ely, Associate Director, Human Resources Products and Services at OPM. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Sally Thomas. Kay, we talked a fair amount about the federal employees' health benefits programs that you all manage there. But if I understand this correctly, if we read today, about 97% of the $2 trillion the U.S. healthcare budget is spent on disease management. As such, we're seeing a shift in the private sector away from disease management and a focus on preventative and wellness programs, sometimes even paying incentives to employees to make healthier choices. Can you tell us a little bit more about your efforts in involving chronic care management and implementing wellness programs within the federal government?
Sure. You know, when you're talking about disease management or a wellness program, it's really all about managing a population's health. And chronic care management is an integrative approach, often involving multiple disciplines to control a health risk. Wellness care is really a culture. It requires behavioral change within a population to take on a different approach. We're a little different in the sense that the average FEHB, or the Federal Employees Health Benefit Program, enrollee is 58 years old. So our population is a little different. Unlike many other employer-sponsored health benefit programs, we have both the employee and the retiree in the risk pool. Most of your private health care providers do not have a retiree in their risk pool. That makes a little bit of a difference. But managing a general population's health requires really utilizing multiple tools. We have wellness promotion programs, but those alone do not reduce costs to the employees or employers unless they're really targeted to a very specific clinical risk. You know, the companies with the lowest health cost employ tailored programs that focus on catastrophic and chronic illnesses first, along with outcome-based biometric screenings and wellness. So we've been working with the FEHB carriers for several years to promote and expand benefits for preventive care screenings and management of chronic diseases and different conditions. I think this is certainly an area where we're going to need to continue our focus. We have over 250 different choice options in the FEHB, which I mentioned earlier. And these programs really do vary. They take on all kinds of different shapes and respond to different needs depending on the type of the plan and the geographic location. And we have those plans and a plan comparison tool that's actually on the OPM website. But some of the common disease management approaches that are used by the carriers in the FEHB is specialty pharmacy programs, educating members about medications and recommendations to members on the most cost-effective methods of obtaining medications. There's outreach departments that actually provide personal and on-site service and information to federal employees through phone calls, newsletters, and visits. There's a lot of educational materials that are also provided, and there's an interactive plan on the website that focuses on women's, men's, children's, and senior health. So I think there's quite a bit that we're doing.
So on a related topic, could you tell us more about OPM's efforts to establish a short-term disability insurance program for federal employees? What's the status of this effort, and how is it going to work? And if I may, how does it fill the gap in an otherwise attractive and competitive federal benefits program?
Well, OPM's legislative proposal would basically provide employees with the opportunity to purchase short-term disability insurance on a voluntary basis at a group rate. In the event of their temporary inability to work because of a non-work-related illness, injury, or even maternity. We submitted actually the proposal to Congress on March 4th, 2008, and Congress has not yet taken action on that proposed bill. The primary goal is to ensure an opportunity for employees, and particularly new employees, to obtain additional income protection for recovery from accidents and illnesses and for maternity purposes. Currently, federal employees, to cover these kinds of illnesses or injuries or maternity, have to take their annual leave or their sick leave if they're unable to work. And I myself have had three children, and so my sick leave took quite a hit every time. It's also a way for us to stay competitive. in what's really a global job market. So your point is well taken. It's the fact that it's just another benefit that we'd like to be able to offer. A majority of the private and the public sector employers competing with the federal government actually have some kind of short-term disability insurance. 76% to 85% of the mid-size and large employers actually provide short-term disability insurance. So it's something we really we believe strongly in. Employees that are new to the federal government, which is certainly a group that we're very interested in, really would not have built up a substantial enough leave balance to take care of sort of an unexpected loss of income. It could become a real financial hardship. So it's definitely something that we're very interested in.
Now, Kay, as you know, approximately 60% of the federal workforce will be eligible to retire in the next decade, and the estimates are that 40% will actually retire. It's often referred to as the pending retirement tsunami, as the federal government is facing the baby boomers nearing their retirement age. From your perspective, what do you see federal agencies doing to replenish this loss and trying to minimize the effect these retirements will have on the federal workforce?
Well, I think we can always all do more. A lot of the agencies are certainly using some of our leadership programs that I mentioned earlier, and that certainly is key. But I think knowledge management, knowledge transfer is really what we need to focus on. We didn't get a chance to talk about the reemployed annuitant program, but that's another opportunity that OPM has sponsored in trying to retain some of the knowledge and share some of the knowledge with the new workforce, bringing in recent retirees. Currently, the way the program works, if a federal retiree comes back into the government, then they have to, there's an offset with their salary as opposed to going to work with another company. There is no offset to their salary. So that's one of the things that we think would be a step in the right direction. We also have a new program that we just developed in my organization that's called LEAD, which is the Leadership Education Development Certificate Program. And it's a fully integrated method of leadership development. And this was really in response to a lot of customer requests for something very similar, a certificate of leadership, essentially. And it's a grouping of five different courses that can be completed over three years. And there's four different levels of leadership. It's team and project lead, that level, supervisor, manager, and executive. And each one of the levels culminates with a capstone project, which is basically writing a paper describing the participants' application of their curriculum teachings into the workplace. So we think this is another application as a succession management tool, as well as a recognition of an intense and individual leadership development.
Now, Kay, staying on the topic of leadership, a recent global human capital study conducted by IBM showed that over 75% of the human resource executives interviewed believe that they are having difficulty developing future leaders. I know that OPM has been trying to address this within the public sector. Can you talk about some of the efforts you and the rest of the folks in the agency have been pursuing to ensure continuity of leadership through succession planning and executive development?
One of the key succession planning programs that we've developed in conjunction with the White House is the Presidential Management Fellows Program, and it is the premier program for leadership development in the federal civil service. Its purpose, of course, is to attract federal service outstanding men and women from a variety of academic disciplines and career paths who have an interest and commitment to excellence in leadership and the management of public policy and programs. It's a two-year opportunity, federal government fellowship for individuals at the graduate level course of study from an accredited college or university. Now, the candidates must be nominated by their college or university and then invited to OPM for an OPM-conducted assessment. Finalists then are selected based on their assessment score and offered to agencies for the two-year fellowship program. Agencies hire fellows to help them meet their succession planning needs. But what's really important is the program has grown from 446 applicants and 116 agency appointments in 1996 to 3,725 applicants and 435 appointments in 2007. And for those of you that still may have some hiring needs, we have not completed all the hiring for 2008, and we still have folks available on the list until April of 2009.
Okay, to change gears a bit here, I want to go back to a comment you made earlier about the competitiveness of the global job markets for federal employees. Could you elaborate a bit more on your efforts to support alternative work arrangements such as telecommuting within the federal government?
Sure. We're proud to offer the maximum telework opportunities for our employees. The company that I worked with for 5 years was virtual for most of the years that I was there. So I learned that telework really does work, and you can still be very successful in a telework environment. Most of my employees have some form of telework that's available to them. As a matter of fact, in 2007, over 400 of my employees actually had formal telework arrangements in place. The Center for Talent Services, with its nationwide program, probably serves as the best model in my organization for our alternative work arrangements. More than 150 of those employees telework at least part-time, and about 49 of those individuals actually telework from their home full-time. With the Center for Retirement Insurance Services, we worked very closely with AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, representatives to resolve some security issues that we had so that the employees could go back to telework. So I am a huge proponent of teleworking and use it extensively within my organization.
Could you elaborate on your efforts to assist federal agencies with implementing effective knowledge management systems? Because it strikes me as we look towards this pending retirement wave, there's a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience that could potentially walk out of the door. But what are you doing to mitigate some of those risks?
We rarely have an agency that actually asks us to help them implement a knowledge management system portal. But really, it's on the periphery pretty much of everything that we talk about. As we talk about succession planning and all the different tasks that we complete and do with our different agency customers, we talk constantly and consistently about intellectual resources and knowledge management and knowledge capture. One of the programs that we haven't had a chance to talk about too much yet in my organization is called Go Learn. It's the eGov initiative that I mentioned earlier. And it basically is a program that deploys e-learning and training administration infrastructure across the federal government. And it's basically a repository of information for agencies to manage, track, and deliver and report their training events. So even though it's not a knowledge management tool per se, it really does provide human capital solutions to assist agencies with each stage of the employee development lifecycle.
So on this notion of succession planning and knowledge capture, could you tell us about your plans and actions in assisting the current presidential transition period?
Well, the presidential transition is certainly a time for us to be very responsive, provide the information that is needed. Most of my management team has been through multiple administrations, and we are certainly currently using that expertise to work well with the transition team. I was myself at OMB during the transition from the Clinton administration to the Bush administration, so I am certainly familiar with, you know, the demand for information. It certainly is high, but it's also a learning opportunity. I tell my folks, as we're putting things together, you learn every time you look at your portfolio of what your business is all about. And as you're trying to retell it to someone else, you learn something you might not have thought of. At least in my organization, we have a good story and we're anxious to tell it. So we are very cognizant that the need for information and concise information is keen, but we also have trains that we have to keep running. So it's a busy time.
What does the future hold for the Office of Personnel Management? We will ask Kay Ely, Associate Director, Human Resources, Products and Services at OPM, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.